Blog Talk Radio.
Well, 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 what is this? It does appear that in my madness I might have been speaking to myself. You all have missed the delightful dialogue as you stood out in the hall while I beguiled myself with the wonders of a delightful poem. But thankfully I did hear the wandering of a dear friend, and so perhaps he has come to my rescue. Is that you, my dear Arvindelle?
Why, yes, yes, that would be me. Here in spirit and possibly flesh, maybe.
Well, I am so glad that you have dug your way out from beneath the hag's cabin. Did they keep you chained down there too long, my dear?
No, usually I charge for such details, but let's just say yes.
Well, I am glad that you did claw your way out, though I do understand how you too might enjoy a little moment of bondage from beyond, if you will. Tonight, as I was trying to tell our dear listeners and our dear friends who have wandered their way into the library, that we have done a little bit of remodeling, and I was hoping that we might have some friends come to visit, and, well, you are always one that I do delight in. The first poem, though, as I welcome everyone into the library, would be a poem by a poet named Scraps and Scribbles. If you would, usher everyone to their seats. Please remind them to dust off the pillows. The maid may or may not have disappeared into the woods, and we had a little issue with some werewolves. So I'm not sure if she's going to be back, but if you could usher everyone to their seat while I read this, it would be greatly appreciated, my dear. So this is a poem called Scraps and Scribbles, and it's titled Undefinable. You can't divine exactly why. It's strange, but something in my eyes disquiets you. It seemed when I arrived, the shadows strained, a momentary flicker, corner view. I look all right, well kempt in fact, although a little overdressed, perhaps you thought. It's something else, intangible, dark glow, vague warning in a fable you were taught. Beneath my skin there is no flesh or blood, no bone to mark me like others here. There's only a spark of thunder, storm, and flood that stirs around a broken tip of spear. You make excuses, tell your friends you're late, but I don't follow. God knows I can wait. Now, as everyone has delightfully sat down, I have to say I'm so delighted that we do have guests back within this library. This is a time when so often we get to have a little bit of fun, a reminder of our mortality, feel the invigoration of a little adrenaline in our blood as we encounter fears from perhaps a safe distance. And this one reminds me of just that, reveling in things that make us semi-human, perhaps, those that perhaps toe the line of not so mortal, which I think you might appreciate, my dear, wouldn't you agree?
There are many levels of mortality in existence, and I would have to say that I can definitely relate, being not so human myself. But I would have to say that vague warning in a fable you were taught. Beneath my skin there is no flesh or blood, no bone to mock me like these others here. As well as intangible dark glows. I know many of those. I have to say that this undefinable poem speaks to my own heart, or whatever I could find. If I could find it, it would speak to it. In any case, I thought this was a fantastic deviation.
Oh, I would have to agree. I have to say, it reminded me of you, my dear, though I myself might not have some spears riddled in me. I do unfortunately still bleed, at least when I'm bitten. So this is quite one of those delightful things that reminds us of those just slightly off creatures. It's a reminder of that mortality and how all the different ways it might be lost. But speaking of things that might be bitten, I did stumble across another poem recently, and while it does maybe speak of less mythological creatures and things that people might attune themselves to, I do believe it would be a good one for you to read. Would you mind taking this one for me, darling?
Oh, I will do my best. Let's see here. Oh, this is A Vampire by Ayanthea. My gaze wandered slowly from his gleaming raven hair to his unsmiling midnight eyes. His face was perfectly carved, as if from ancient stone, pale and cold like marble. His nose was a scimitar, sharp, curved, impervious, flaring at my quickening pulse. His mouth was a red-tipped rose, sensual and dark as wine, delicately baring his ivory teeth. Draped in black and scarlet, he stood unmoving, unruffled, a sphinx made of shadows and desire. I saw him night after night, waiting at the threshold of my fevered imagination. He spoke not a word, wrapped in his tomb-like silence, inquiring eyes burning my skin. I wanted to extend my hand to touch the velvet of his crimson cloak and his plush, glistening lips. I wanted to run my fingers through his flowing tresses across his hard, elegant face. I wanted to unwrap the mystery, peel away the layers of solitude, wipe out that indecipherable sadness. I wanted to hold and caress, kissing till the statue smiled and returned my hungry kisses. Despite the churning fear, the gnawing uncertainties, despite the murk, I wanted to surge wild like a river and fall into the ocean that was him, meeting my fate at last. And so it came to pass, one audacious, exquisite moment, and I was in the silvery moonlight, my warmth flowing into his icy veins, my throat bared to his thirst, and unveiled and imperiled, I lay languorous in his embrace, delirious, euphoric, bereft, the uncanny chill seeping in, drowning and dismantling my being, till my body glimmered like permafrost, and my light merged into his darkness. End poem.
Oh, what a delightful read that was, and I do apologize. It might have been better in my voice, but getting to hear you speak of such things was such a delight to watch, too. This is one of those moments where, again, I am reminded how thankful it is that I can bleed when bitten, but also a beautiful reminder of how the darkness seeps into all of us, calls to us to bear our necks to it and revel on the ledge of uncertainty, a moment to become immortal, or perhaps one to meet your mortality. Oh, it was quite delightful, and now it does play into the idea of the vampire, the one who comes to drink our blood, fill his veins with our life, and leave us discarded to either carry on the curse or take away as its victim. It is delightful, don't you think, my darling?
There are many delightful things that can be attained through hunger, many hungers. Many, many delightful things. Yes, yes, I agree. In all of my being.
Oh, I do love that. I do love that thought, my darling. All the delightful hungers. Yes, there are many that do leave us wanting, do they not? The hungers, the thirst that allow us to devour and be devoured. Now, if I did not know better, I'd say you might be flirting with me, and perhaps I need to take you down for a little trip in the dungeon. But I'm not sure your hags would appreciate that too much. But with that, speaking of vampires and the creatures of the night, the hags that bind you and the ways that it can fill us with unholy life, it does remind us exactly of this time of year. It reminds us of Halloween. And what it was here for, the carving of the pumpkins to keep the evil spirits at bay, dressing up as ghosts and goblins and ghouls to make sure that they did not follow us home or see us for what we are. And it reminds me of a poem called Halloween Central by Diddley. And I'll take this one as everyone settles in. And another brief moment for those who continue to stumble into our little haven as we read. I do want to remind you that you should be weary of the shadows. And for those who offer you an opportunity to go gallivanting through our halls, why, I might tease Arlindale of coming down to my dungeon. I would encourage you to not follow our inhabitants. They are not always quite so friendly, just as this holiday sometimes finds. But if you are all curious, remember I am your hostess, Victoria, and I will make sure that you are well cared for, at least while you remain within my library. No promises as you make your way home. So with that, as we think about the ghosts and ghouls, the goblins that can follow us tonight, this, too, is a poem called Halloween Central. Halloween Central. Our village is a pretty place, with straw-thatched roofs and golden stone, a village green complete with pond, no modern homes to spoil the tone. We have some shops, a cozy pub, and lots of grass and leafy greens. In summer, we get dragonflies and crickets, mayflies, hummingbees. When autumn comes before the snow, we dress her up for Halloween, hang cobwebs from the poles and eaves, stand ghosts and phantoms on the green. A pumpkin sits on every step with spiky teeth and ghastly grin. We decorate our homes with glee. Most villagers love to join in. There are some rude witches here. They quietly don't flaunt their arts. A warlock too, a pleasant chap, but all keeps to himself for the most part. But all the monsters keep away. In caves and cellars they hide out. Most of this year they stay concealed. On Halloween they're seen about. The vampires in their long black cloaks with staring eyes and gleaming teeth. The mummies trailing bandages with rotting flesh showing beneath. The reptile creatures glistening, emerging from the dark cold pond. The ghosts and ghouls, the floating orbs, from all the time that's now long gone. They mingle with the local kids, go trick-or-treating, knock on doors. The people know what to expect. Most will have seen it all before. It's quite a show, nevertheless. The children dressed up for the night, all mingling with the real things, trying to give an awful fright. And when the children have gone home, they gather on the common land, drink ale and cider, dance till dawn, to music from a ghostly band. Faint echoes of the monster mash come drifting in the cooling air. When daylight comes, the grass is clear. You'd never know that they'd been there. And in November, as snow falls, when roofs and pavements disappear, we light the fires, eat hearty meals, while Christmas day draws ever near. A stranger here would never know the secret that this village holds. We keep our counsel, hold our tongues. This story will remain untold till now. End poem. Oh, what delight I have. It is a poem that was in fact written of our own little library, I do believe. A little place hidden within the catacombs of our own late night poets. A place where the monsters come lurking from the shadows. Though they do not hide the rest of the year, they do get to roam freely here. But I would warn that sometimes it's best to keep your wits about you as you go wandering, as mentioned previously. They are not always quite so delightful. They are not always quite so fun. And the monster mash can really drag you down if you let it. Don't you think so, darling?
Oh, yes. And I can say that I cannot confirm nor deny whether some drifters may have been part of an experiment or two, but I have to say that this particular poem really brought back memories from the hag singing to the children, telling them stories of Barovian days and nights, and right before devouring them. But let's not delve on the past. I have to say that this is a really well put together piece of art I don't want to say greatly, but I will say generously describes a lot of the things that I like about the creepy and the wicked.
Oh, I do so love it. I love the neither confirmation or denial of the things that might go missing and how that just might happen. This is a place that is always not so kind and yes, reminiscent of Barovia. I do quite agree with that. It was a delightful little holiday that I got to take in such the place. The fog, the smog, the lack of sunlight. Oh, it was. Well, I could daydream about it, especially in the horrid days of summer when the sun is all too bright and takes no qualms with making us uncomfortable. But speaking of a delightful little place like Barovia, and the joys of trick-or-treating on a Halloween. I did find this piece within our shelves. Would you mind reading it for me, darling?
I will give it a try. Let's see. Trick-or-Treat by Kendall. Malevolent ways, ready or not, truth or dare, if truth be told, I say, the hills have eyes, we're watching. They know what I did last summer with Jennifer's body. The devil's rejects were watching the naked sinners in the last house on the left. There's a curve where there used to be a daycare or orphanage on a dead and evil road for the devil to house the dead and that won't die. Can't you see? These were once their woods, in this place where their misery's company came to settle and lie, walking over the graves, the sacred ground toiled, the poor gratinations drowning in the dreams wet from the bed you made, stained and soiled. You were you when you and I first saw it, the child's play, the poltergeist. Hide and seek us. Insidious dark pleasures, the haunting, new nightmares, and the final destination. where they spit on your grave, remembering the ring, that last Halloween, another scream, the changeling, the evil dead ends and wrong turns. There was that that thing, the shining and conjuring. Back when I was waiting to love Jennifer's body, a switchblade romance, when a stranger calls from a cabin in the woods. Goodbye, mommy. Under the skin, the ghost dimension, the evil dead, the town that dreaded it all unfriended. Hush, don't breathe. Find a quiet place before sundown. Get in the hole in the ground. It's 47 meters down. You'll meet the residents, evil, running this town. It's lights out in the darkness. When you feel the tremors, sometimes they come back with the others. It follows in the shallows. You'll see the creep show and hear my psycho and the stir of echoes. Unless it's Fright Night and you're a good old boy and no one cares what they do in the shadows. Watching Ghostface scream, all waiting in line to love Jennifer's body. End poem.
Well, you can't help it when you find a delightful piece of flesh. Of course, they all want to enjoy it, but what is most delightful is it reminds us of all the different ways in which we get enraptured by this time of year. The movies, the books, the stories, the haunted houses that we like to pretend are not quite so scary, and the ones that are probably a little more real than make-believe. The risks of those residents following you home. Fear comes in many ways. It comes on many days, and yet on Halloween it always feels a little bit more real, a little less trick, a little more treat. But always be sure to check your candy, right, darling?
Oh, yes. There may be some dream pastries about. You never know. I have to say that the worst of these, the most grotesque of these houses tend to be owned by those who wear the mask of saints. And those are the really scary, really terrifying encounters, is when you finally see people for who they are. And I thought this was a great amalgamation of ghastly titles of horror's past, and I commend them for their creativity at expressing it.
You know, you did just remind me. I do believe that we do have some dream pastries around here. Now, if you wish to talk about a delightful little trip, you should try your little fancy at this. So, for those of my darling guests who are here, other than perhaps a taste of bog water to help wash it down, we have a delightful array of dream pastries. Yes, the hags that house our dear Arsenal provided them to us this night so that you might enjoy all the delectable joys that this library has to offer. And as you bite into those delicious treats, the warmth of the fresh-baked goodness popping with your teeth the way that flesh might give way. Do remember that your travels should be well companioned. That if you go wandering, do not follow those ghosts. But Arvindale, I'm sure, could help you find your way home. Right, darling?
I would recommend you strap in and pray to whatever gods you pray to when consuming such, but yes, it is well worth it.
Oh, yes, strap in. Delightful idea. Perhaps something after not so many guests are around, I do think. But it also reminds me of this next piece by our own Teresa Strashenkov. She wrote a piece, it's called A Spooky House. Now, granted, some houses might be haunted and some might be a little more spooky and terrifying. Of course, we have a few that are filled with nightmares. But I wanted to read this as it reminds me of part of the delight that comes from this time of year. And so with that, it's time to spark a spooky tale full of werewolves and bats and things like that. It begins on the porch of a real spook house. That's what I'm about to sneak into. The door's already open a bit, so I push the door open as I enter. I walk into an empty hall full of cobwebs and dust all over the place. I start to hear walking on the floor, so I run and hide under the steps. I peek out to see who it could be. It is just Dracula going to pee. He just woke up from a very long nap. I also run into some bats. This house is too spooky for me. A sissy, you must call me. And on that sentiment, you might be right. Well, I do have to say I do love this poem. Some houses are indeed a little too spooky, though I can attest that Dracula is not one for a midnight urination. That being said, it does sound delightful, don't you think? A house full of cobwebs and dust. It reminds me of some darker portions of our dungeon. Thinking of, you don't think she got lost in the forbidden section, do you?
Oh, she may not have been lost, maybe taken, but probably not lost. I cannot confirm or deny this. I would have to agree with the Dracula. I think he was just pouring out some old wine. I have not known him. He's too much of a prude to urinate in public. But who knows? Maybe she caught a rare occasion. But I have to say that I did enjoy her interpretation of this so-called spooky house. Everyone has things that they fear, and she put hers on display, which takes quite a bit of courage, actually.
Oh, that's very true. That is very true indeed. And it is always a courageous thing to say that you are just not up for some things. I mean, after all, safe words exist for a reason, do they not? But that was delightful. A dear reminder of some time that I spent with Dracula himself. Now, you want to talk about a good little bite. Well, he is a delightful little treat. But it reminds me of another piece that we have, not perhaps a spooky house, but perhaps a ragged one. And here, I think it's just right over here. Yes, I found it on this page. Why don't you give this a read for us, darling?
Sorry, my hands are not what they used to be. Okay, this is The Ragged House by Orange Sage. You walk past the house with tall, weathered gray walls and a roof browned by rust, trying not to look at the screen door rattling with the quiet murmur of bones or at the glinting windows where eyes might be peering out, trying not to think about what they say. On nights when the thin as fingernails slice moon knives through the coagulated clouds, terrible screams and horrible laughter escapes the walls, and always a wind haunts the eaves before a bloodied cloak seeps from the thick-set entrance and blouses up, enveloping the screen door, and anyone who bears witness is never seen again. This is what they say, looking at the cobwebbed screen door, murmuring in a sudden gust. You hurry past, legs trembling. End poem.
Well, talk about a spooky little delight. That was most definitely one. It reminds me of the first little home that I lived in before I was able to go and find this great library to wander its more magnificent halls. Yes, I remember there were many a night when I watched the screen flapping in the window through the broken pane of glass. I got to listen to the house creaking. Many call it settling, but Let's be honest. Sometimes it gets to a moment where you're not quite sure if it's still inhabitable. They did condemn the place, which was unfortunate because I think I just about had it at the right spot, but for some reason, everyone else in the neighborhood seemed to think that it was just a decrepit piece of property. Of course, there were the delightful tales of witches and ghosts that resided in it. I will say they never did bother me, though, and many times they did come and sit upon my bed when I had a nightmare. Summer. Oh, it haunts me, I swear, those days of sun. Thankfully, we are into the more cloudy, cold weather. But yes, oh, my first home. Oh, I do swear they have just painted a picture of it. Tell me, do you get homesick when you hear stories like this too, darling? Or does it remind you of what you get to live in now?
I cannot really attest to my home because I do not remember it, but I must say that living under tree roots for a few centuries, that sounds, their description sounds more like paradise by comparison. You get to hear every chitter and roar and scream within miles because of the echoing darkness. And I have to say that though their plight was minorly what you would refer to as scary or trepidatious, I can say that to me it sounds like a dream. So I am more than welcome to visit this place.
You know, it does remind me, there's a little place that I saw recently. I think it's a little, well, not so little state called Illinois. A little town of mansions that has become a ghost town. All of them falling apart and potentially a few inhabitants to keep you company. I'm telling you, now I know that you just got back from Barovia, but maybe we go on an adventure of our own. I'm just saying, the weather's finally nice. Wouldn't it be delightful to go diving into old homes over in Illinois? See what delightful creatures still reside there? It has me daydreaming. I do apologize. I got caught up in that a little bit, that thought. Perhaps, as I sit here thinking of the next greatest thing that we could be doing, your little vacation from this library, perhaps we will consult our little ball. We do have a piece that I believe the author was trying to communicate with us, but they had trouble finding their way in the library. Thankfully, if you do manage to get lost here, your voice is not always gone. And so, yes, they're coming through. Their name is Northern Powerhouse, and they have a piece called The Human Sacrifice.
The Human Sacrifice. Diaphanously dressed there in a gown of whitest thread, she stepped towards the altar in a steady, nervous tread. I lifted her upon its cold, austere, stony face and let her feel the fear of the shackle's grim embrace. The manacles that stretched her wrists so far above her head contrasted with the ankle chains encasing her with dread. And now that she could not escape, I knew I'd take my time to savor and enjoy the slow enactment of the crime. Each helpless wriggle as her body struggled to get free filled me with an energizing, tantalizing glee. Her bare feet kicked and coiled and twisted tight within their chains, and each groan she emitted sent a tremor through my veins. Her bosom swelled enticingly, her heart's entrancing pound made her breathing falter through her chest's delicious round. She trembled and she quivered as I stroked that long blonde hair and draped it to the side so her exquisite neck was bare. The fear that took root in her as she first glimpsed the knife and felt it tease her jugular, her blood, her precious life. I felt the scarlet surge in her that I would soon release. One final incantation was my solitary caprice, but then I gazed into her eyes, so beautiful and scared, and knew right then my sacrifice was finally prepared. I drank in every scream and kick as I then went to press the blade into the crimson tide beneath her frightened flesh. Then after the debauching vigor of my bloodlust waned, I placed her severed head upon the altar, badly stained. It sighed and said, "You've gone too far for this year's Halloween. Next year can't we just dress up as monsters painted green?"
Oh, here I was thinking that they might have caught us in a little bit of a tryst, my darling. Those moments when perhaps we have a little too much fun that so many might not appreciate. But alas, it turned into a little bit of a jest, a hope to make people a little more frightened of the displays that we partake in. Still a delight. The lead up was so tantalizing. But what can I say? I'm in a bit of a dreamy state. What are you thinking of?
This actually made me think of you. This is right down your alley, so to speak. But I also found a little bit of what you would call excitement in putting myself in either of these positions. So I have to say that he did very well in pulling us into the fray, so to speak. And I felt myself on the table, but I also felt myself with a knife. And I have to say that that's quite talented to be able to pull off such. And I also am reminded of a bard because of the flow of this, a bard that was murdered a few months back. I won't say whether the hags did it or not, but it is highly likely. In any case, I thought it was a great recitation, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, that is so unfortunate to hear about the bard, but if I'm being fully honest, the idea of you with a knife, well, I know the skill you have with that. That being said, though, I do wonder if that bard did get to have at least a little bit of fun, even if it's perhaps a little dismembered. I mean, who has to say that you need a complete person to have a little fun? But some are not so into those kind of plays, and well, they can be a bit extreme depending on your taste, but that's the fun of it, is finding those partners that go that extra mile, who give an arm and a leg. Oh, I tickle myself at the thought. You know, perhaps we should dig that bard up. I'm just saying, once upon a time, you were rather crafty with, well, making things a little bit more invigorated again. Perhaps a thought. The veil is thin. You never know, right, darling?
Indeed. Now you have my rusty hamster wheel spinning in my brain.
Well, I would not wish to have anything else. There's a little bit more friction when there's a little bit of rust. But while we are on the topic of the mind, I do have a piece here by Randa Yostri that's titled Spotless Mind. And well, maybe this is a little light that we can dance down. It reads, "A child was taken a hold of by a dark force entity, a globule of black smoke, monster from the abyss, a shapeshifter bent on consuming her essence. Her innocence opened the door for possession. When he walked in, a cold tremor invaded. She felt she could have been the perfect target, racked with a train of torturing, piercing thoughts, with his high, taunted growl. She was hunted down, kidnapped, spirited away to a demon dimension, trying to exonerate herself from the inevitable grip that the chase was furious with a flurry of beats, as if she was wagging a battle against a pack of wild dogs. The poor girl had suffered enough, had her in his clutches, gripped her more tightly, stared down at her with insatiable bloodlust, savagely entered her mind, and closed the door behind him." End poem. I do so love this. A succubus in many ways. though it's not really a succubus. When it's a male demon, it would be an incubus, but those can be fun. A little play of the mind. Taking of innocence. This night leaves me with so many delights, so many memories of my own, and perhaps a few that need to be relived. You know, I did just polish up the dungeon. We have a few new straps and devices we could play with. And of course, we do have a pentagram down there. We could make a summons, of course. Oh, the joys we could have. But I digress. That is not our purpose here today. Today we are here to delight and revel in the terrors of the night that Halloween brings on. Perhaps I've been stuck in this library alone for too long. Darling, tell me, what does this remind you of?
Actually, it reminds me of this, how do you say, I don't want to say asshole, but I will say this uncouth character named Strahd. Yes, he tends to be a manipulator of the mind of sorts, and this really seems like his work. So I am wondering if maybe perhaps he was a victim. One could say. Any case, I thought that her description of the event was very vivid and terrifying to the weak of hearts, but I thought it was very well done in its depiction of terror.
Strahd, you tell me. Strahd, a man who plays with the mind, makes victims from those he deem weaker. Well, he does sound like my cup of tea. Tell me, do you think that he might, available?
Only to everyone.
Oh, well, that is unforgivable. Well, you know, hopes and dreams, but then Dracula turned out to be a little bit of a player, if you will. Those men who think they have the power, it is just unfortunate. True power is not your admirers, but all the ways that you can weave some people around your fingers more than once, if you catch my drift. But speaking of admirers, this does remind me of another poem I saw recently by a man named Bluesman. Yes, it's here in this book. Here, I'll hold it for you. I know your hands are not well, and well, this diet has already given me some ideas, so I don't mind cozying up against a little something with some flesh. So, let me hold this for you while you read, if you'd be so kind.
I will give it my best. Secret Admirer by Blues Man. The blinding eye of death slowly set on the western horizon. The birth cry of the cocooning night exploded into the sky with the light of a million stars. The scent of deadly nightshade, the funeral and funeral lilies, drifted across the graveyard, carried on a cool spring breeze. The father of all nightmares picked up the alluring scent and stirred in his earthen bed. It was springtime. Everything was in bloom, including the virgins. Puberty passed, young rosebuds that would open to his desires. It had been a long, cold, and lonely, fruitless winter, and he was hungry in both stomach and loin. Eerily, the hinges creaked as he opened the lid of the mahogany box he had lain in for far too long. Stricken with grief over the death of his damned soulmate, the pain had carried him through the winter of his broken black heart. Not once had he fed, not once had he slipped his blood-gorged member into the valley of his earthbound desires. He had grieved as long as his instincts would allow. It was springtime in the village, and the virgins were waiting. From a slit cut into the heavy door of his mausoleum, he had watched her all winter. Every evening at the twilight hour, when his death became life and dusk swept across the land, she would visit the grave of her departed true love, wearing the cloth of the covenant, but not yet married to God. He could hear the beat of her heart pounding beneath her supple, ripe breasts. The pace of the beats quickened as she laid on his grave and slipped her hand through an open seam hidden in the fold of her dress, searching for that steamy mound.
What was that?
She had saved for him. As she arched her hips in ecstasy amidst the muffled moans of her forbidden fantasy, salty pearls of sadness ran from her eyes. The bane of her beloved could stand no more. He opened the door for the first time since the death of his mate and the death of her executioner, the one this virgin so passionately cried for, gone but not forgotten in both of their hearts. Still writhing in ecstasy from the sadomasochist display of lust and grief, he floated across the hollowed ground, touching down just a few feet from the foot of the grave. He leaned forward, feet leaving the ground slowly. He lowered himself, his body and cape completely enshrouding her, until he could feel her breath on his cheek. He whispered his greeting, a fell voice in the air. She opened her eyes, nostrils flared, eyes opened wider, but no scream came, only submission. His blood-gorged member brushed against her swollen mound and still hidden beneath her dress, and she moaned, still twitching from her self-induced ecstasy. He slid his ice-cold tongue into her moist, hot mouth, and his cold black heart warmed just a bit. He sliced the strings with his razor-sharp nails, and her bodice tumbled off her, exposing the beauty of an hourglass waist and supple breasts that no man had ever touched. Slowly, he traced his tongue down her long, inviting neck. Down he went, and goosebumps followed. He danced from breast to creamy white breast, nipples hard from one flick of his intoxicating tongue. She moaned and he swelled. He could wait no longer. Pulling up her dress, he slid his icy dagger of love deep into her mound as he sunk the fangs of commitment deep into her lovely, long neck. Reaching down with his razor-sharp nails, he pulled out just long enough to bloody his throbbing dagger of love, and with his next thrust gave her immortality. Wrapping his arms around her, he left her neck and slipped his tongue deep into her throat, and her hips rose to meet his thrust. And then it happened. She traced her tongue to the curve of his neck, and he felt two sharp daggers pierce his skin. He screamed in ecstasy as he freed his dead swimmers, covered in the blood still pouring from his member, consummating his marriage. Tombstones in their eyes, he carried his pale bride across the threshold of his mausoleum and home.
Well, I do have to say, tonight was not supposed to be about so much delightfulness, but it does remind us of the ecstasy that comes with some of the creatures that walk about the world at this time, that are a little bit more accepted than they might be in others. Oh, yes, it does give me ideas. The delight, the desire. a reminder of the darkness that creeps into all of us, one way or another. The terrors that could come forth. Truly delightful, don't you think?
Yes, I have to say that even to a corpse of myself, it was very stirring, I have to say. And maybe there's life in these old bones yet, or so this poem brought it out. In any case, I thought that this rendezvous was very tantalizing in its execution and inspiring, to say the least.
Oh, most certainly. It does raise a few bones from the grave, that is for sure. But yes, it is truly an inspiring piece. It does remind me, though, of another piece that we have. And again, I think this one, too, has a poet attempting to come in from our little crystal ball. Here, let's see if I can find it.
Daughters of the Moors. My mistresses, as death's doors be, as daughters of Enoch, whom over Moors was laid. Oh, how I long, as I've called into our endless nights, and yearned for their icy touches, as warm they turn in my hands and slithers, as nails slide softly over skin. Awaken then, as drowsiness from the nights, as wheels are lifted, still covered by the clouds, made by the steaming vapor from our cups. Yet I was not there, and you were not here. Neither of us existed, only spaces between. My mistresses, as embraces be, as fangs in arteries, as the moistness of forks left, as it withdraws, slips away into the mountains, and its soul inside them as arches and nuances of rainbows cast into valleys and spectres, shades unseen. Oh, missing you, but more they will not know, for our love is forbidden, in secrecy it swells. As a woman pregnant without giving birth, are the songs we've sung of it as its grasp in our mind's eye between horizon's twilight. My mistresses, as nothing be, as fog over moors and wind as it blew silently, to move grass and flowers with their breath, and out from darkness cover slips, dressed in cobwebs, moss and leaves, as the brides of eternity.
Well, I think our current hostess had to step away, so I will take charge for now. This, I am beginning to think that we have to check our graveyards and cages to see if we have any missing tenants, because it seems as though the our poets have been rolling around in the grave dust, so to speak. And I have to say that if I was able to feel jealousy, I just might. But the Daughter of the Moors, this is a great depiction of the fantasy with the man and his mistress of the night. I have to say that there was a great longing, and more than just a lustful approach, hidden in this. My mistress, as nothing be, as fog over moors, and wind as it blew silently, to move grass and flowers with their breath, and out from darkness covers slips, dressed in cobwebs, moss and leaves, as the brides of eternity. Yes, I have to say that it is quite beautiful. and I do not relish in beauty very much, but I can recognize it when I see it. So thank you for that, Zoo. It was very well done. Okay, so since our headmistress is detained for the moment, I will move on to the next poem. Let us see. You have to forgive me. My brain is not as sharp as it once was. The younger brother. Let's go with the younger brother. Okay. This poem is called The Younger Brother by Robert Lust. I had thought of killing my younger brother by burying him behind a wall, but someone would surely miss him. I could not do that all. He was making his yearly visit to remember my birthday. He had inherited the great estate, my house was old and gray. He had ridden over on his horse, bringing a bottle of wine. And when he'd finished his bottle, I said, let us sample mine. Eventually, he turned his back to me. That's when I bashed him on the head. After which, I broke his neck, making sure that he was dead. I sat him on his lively horse, made the horse stampede away. It caused my brother to fall off, much to my dismay. The verdict was an accident. My life is oh so sweet, for now I have the mansion. My revenge is now complete. End poem.
Oh, what a delightful idea. And I do apologize, darling. The last poem that I got to hear, it warmed a few hearts that needed something taken care of. A little too much daydreaming, I do believe. Well, night dreaming, as we have been prancing through these delightful little poems. And this one, of course, is no exception. It is a reminder of the way that our lives change, the way that family comes and goes, and the impacts of actions have on us. I do apologize that my actions took me away for just a moment, but as always, I do appreciate you keeping our guests entertained. I will most assuredly make it up to you later. But here I come in, interrupting your read, and as you were going to say, so please, do tell. Tell me what you thought of this read.
Well, they say that revenge is best served cold, but they do not often say that it is served with a wine bottle. And in this case, it actually was. A wine bottle and a horse. I mean, what's not a good time to have? Vengeance is always one of those messy things, but it is most entertaining to see carried out, and sometimes it can be oh so sweet, as they put it. And in this case, he just happened to complete his plan, and that is very few and far between, so kudos to Robert Lust.
Oh, yes, he did quite manage to finish his plans. It is always nice when those come to fruition in sweet revenge. That reminds me, though, as I've been out tending to a few things, it reminds me of a poem by a poet named Doc and Aras. They wrote one called Something in the Night. Let me find it here. Yes. She heard the moans behind the door and the creaks beneath the floor. But when she turned on the light, there was silence in the night. She got the house for quite a steal, not knowing ghosts and the deal. She looked deeper in its history, a woven tale of mystery. Many dead and long forgotten, rich people and downtrodden, missing, murdered, many died, some of them by suicide. She asked the realtor why she didn't tell. If I told people, the place wouldn't sell. She tries to go on with her life, battling feelings of sorrow and strife. She heard the moans behind the door and the creaks beneath the floor. And when she turned on the light, something took her in the night. End of poem. Yes, I do think that this too is another opportunity of well-placed plans. Often we are motivated for our own ambitions, our own benefits, to persuade people one way or another, to hide, conceal our own endeavors. This poem reminds me of that. So I do have to say, I would be most disappointed if a realtor did not tell me about a house with ghosts. I would, in fact, want to make sure that we only looked at them, but tastes do vary among the living and the dead. Wouldn't you say, Arvindale?
Well, I have to say that she... it's one of those cases where it's the devil you know and the devil you don't, and she thought she knew the devil, but apparently she did not, and he came a-knocking and took her into the night. Well, that's what you get for settling, I suppose. Although I'm not one to talk about certain places of living where I come from. But yes, I if I were her, I could say I would do the same thing. You don't always get a chance to have some place to stay, even though this came at a high price that she could not really pay. So.
Oh, that is very true. That is very true, Arvindale. Though I have to say, I'm always willing to do a little house hunting. You know, finding the houses that we want and taking them. In this market, everything really is a battle. So, if you aren't happy living with both, just below your hags, and I do understand the three sisters can be quite demanding, and, well, you are at the beck and call for a little bit of it, well, then I do understand if you want to go looking, but I'm just saying, you could always make it a little fun.
And speaking of hunting, while you're away, I mentioned that we may want to check our cages and graves, their plots, so to speak, around the property, because there have been many a rollings with corpses in these previous poems. So just make sure that the inventory is correct.
Oh, that is a delightful reminder. Did you know that it was really in the Victorian era that they used to put cages around their dead. Now, some people thought that it was because of fear of vampires, but truly it was because of those horrid grave robbers. They would go in and steal from the dead. I mean, honestly, if you just ask nicely, usually they'll just give you what you want. Now, the vampires, those ones where they buried them face down, had to make sure that if they come clawing out, they go straight to hell, but you both know hell is not quite down now, is it? But regardless, you are quite right. We'll probably want to do an inventory. We do have a few that like to come crawling out of the grave around this time. It is a good reminder, yes. Now, with that in mind, as we do have our guests leave tonight, they should make sure that they stay on the marked path. And when you get to the old man's willow, the old man's beard, sometimes he does like to play a little bit of games. I mean, you can't blame the old man. He gets a little ornery. He is an old man after all and stuck in one place for all of eternity to continue to grow and stretch out. But regardless, sometimes he does cover the path. And if you see it divide or sadly default to the left. I would encourage you not to go that way. We do have the cemetery over there, and well, as Arvindale has mentioned, we may need to watch the guests. But, too, they sometimes like to have a little game of replacements. You may go there and find your own resting place, much like off up in the library. You know, speaking of that, I've not heard from Daniel Ticino. He did do a great while back, about a year ago, managed to find his way in there. And I thought that he had found his way out, perhaps tricked another to take his spot. But usually he comes around to these nights, and well, he's not here. So it does make me wonder. You might be onto something, Arvindale. We might need to go and take an inventory. I do feel Daniel may have stumbled into the graveyard again. You know, I'll check the stairs first. But that being said, there is a poem here about stairs. Yes, it's by T. Perry, 898. Would you be able to read that one for us, darling?
I will do my best. It reminds me of these people that I knew under the stairs once, in any case. This is On the Stairs by T. Perry, 898. Eerie is the sound of talking, heavy footsteps on the stairs, someone standing in the window, but there isn't no one there. Claustrophobic is the feeling, and the walls are closing in. I can hear a child laughing and discern his evil grin. Scraping fingers on the plaster, cold hands press against your lips. Fear shall wrap its arms around you and will hold you in its grip. Shiver in anticipation. One can taste the stench of fear. Heavy breathing is increasing and the end is drawing near. What befell this ancient ruin? Am I doomed to endless night? Someone's clawing at my clothing, something hidden out of sight. Down the stairs my body tumbles, nesting on a sea of bones. Seems another helpless victim's trapped inside the twilight zone. End poem.
Oh my. You don't think that they met Daniel Ticino in the hallway? But, yes, I'm going to have to check there. It does sound like he might be causing some trouble there. Well, nonetheless, it does remind us that like mirrors and graveyards and Halloween, stairwells and stairs can be a place too where encounters happen. And the right one, you just might have a delightful encounter and well, others you don't always quite escape from. But note to self, check the stairwells. For all I know, Daniel Ticino has changed places with a statue this time. That man keeps me on my toes, you know. But what are your thoughts, darling?
Well, as I said, it reminded me of certain people that I knew under the stairs. And they were very nice people, very nice, but quite twisted, even by my standards. In this particular poem, it is a good warning in the sense that you have to be wary of your company, whether it be under stairs or in closets, whether it be a laughing child with an evil grin, or heavy footsteps that traverse above you. You always have to keep a lookout for the less savory of us and the vengeance that often twist their hearts for eternity.
Oh, yes, there are many things that can twist a person. I mean, granted, living under the stairs is most definitely one, but usually the culmination of all the things that have led us to find ourselves in those dark and dreary places. It reminds me of the way that even the world, our faith, can twist us into an image, concept, and shove us into a dark little hole. There's an author tonight who wrote a piece for us that's called Regicidal Dust, and it's by Hosk. We'll give this one a read. It's more prose than a poem, but we're having fun tonight, so why not? You've a God that owes you everything, yet here you are, begging for favors. Beggars can be very well choosers, if they choose to not worship losers. The wizard wiggles his ropes looser, sidled by the two of the king's bruisers. He's lucky the mantis king is eating some poor victim shipped in by his slavers. A glance at the dogmen brought to heel. They've clubs of steel and miss not one meal. The wizard's stomach shudders and leaps. He caught the sight of the no-wit bitch. Exothalamos eyes peeled. She'd gazed for too long in the moon fields, those fields in which she'd caught the wizard who flinches from her watery gaze, still in shock from her violation. A piece of his face hangs from her chin. Several others sit in her gizzard, but she's not come from the fight ungrazed. The power word die incantation could be his last chance at salvation. There's nothing I know of your rogue priest. You emulate your associates. All I ask is that you excuse me. I can fetch your priest, unlike these jerks. His concussion has his vision blurred. He grows dizzy and teeter-totters. Mantis laughs, the sound like sand on glass. The dogmen claim you reek of rubies, stink of silver, and taste of slave turd. The tyrant quips through bloodied slobber from mandibles equipped for slaughter. Neath the king's chuckle, vile and sudsy, screams once the slow stream, now flood the scene. Now both dogmen stare at their captive, the stud's tightening grip, she dried blood. It's good fun when slaves try to run, especially when they've spells to cast, but they've no more sense to cast them. Ah, but the last laugh may not be his. The bitch seizes and falls to the red dust. The stud, instantly blown to pieces. The fascists expose Barax, non plus. More than a wizard, a sorcerer, a trained killer, not a torturer. The assassin climbs the sloped tower, a hill of crimson sand, to murder an overgrown, genocidal shit, and then commit regicide, or bust. End the poem. I think this is delightful. It reminds you, if I'm truth, of some of your own adventures, perhaps some old companions as you traveled through the hills and valleys, found paladins and wine barrels, perhaps. Pray tell. Speak of an adventure, darling.
Yes, actually, we did encounter and some moral crusader as some such hidden in the wine barrel, and I don't mean that he was just deep in the wines, but he was actually in the barrel, and it was quite hilarious. I do not know how he got there, and I don't care, but I just remember that it was it was very funny. Yes, there's on the road there are all kinds of insects and bug queens and witches and vampires and so many things that you have to worry about in Barovia. But this seems like quite an adventure in and of itself. You got sorcerers and assassins and dogmen and mantis people. And, I never been one for bugs, but you come to know them when you live in the ground for so long. This this happened to be a very creative and expressive version of an adventure, and I can certainly respect that in their telling of the tale.
Oh, truly, you are right. It is indeed quite a tale of adventure, a tale of fantasy. So I do quite so enjoy it. I would agree, though, that perhaps it is a little bit different than what you've gotten to experience. So I'm sure there are probably more than a few dreams that you've had of the bugs that have come crawling into your enclave. Delightful, truly, indeed. And it reminds me of another piece that we have that I just recently passed as I've been looking through this volume. It's a work by a poet named David Meerhoff. And it's called Seen and Unseen in the Dark of Night, which is, tell me, that is not so like those bugs that come crawling. But would you mind reading this one for us?
I will do my best. Seen and Unseen in the Dark of Night by David Meerhoff. A night of longing, crisp air crinkles the fabric of sight, bending boundary into fuzzy blur. Objects part and merge as if in vibration to an unseen force without lines and focus, and then gone. Smoke wafts from chimney portal, feeding the dark with unseen remnants of energy once consumed. Party or merry, inside the coven of humans snorkeling the night away to the ignorance of that outside. Bats dance on the trapeze of the mist, sensing the present will be no more. The cold blends with denizens of the forest, bringing nearer to house and hearth the unseen. Outside meets inside in an instant of explode, calamity for some, ecstasy for others. End poem.
Oh, what a delightful idea. The way that the unseen creeps into our lives, into our gaze, penetrates our senses in ways that create horror. It reminds me so much like that of the movie Bird Box, I think it was, that spoke of those that when you looked at some, it drove you mad, caused you to take your own life, and yet others, they were much like angels. It's a reminder of how life, again, twists us into all its little ways. Curves the mind so none of them are alike. Who's to say that making angels out of demons is so bad? Are they not two sides of the same coin? My, tonight has had me rather philosophical. It's had me daydreaming about some delightful things that I might play with after the show if you care to stay the night. Don't wish to wander into the cemetery. Or the way that it just shapes our lives. What an interesting night this night has been. But it is. Always is when it comes to this time of the year. Again, that reminder of our mortality. But I am here thinking fluid thoughts, expressing my workings. Tell me what it made you think of, darling.
Well, in the... Bats dance on the trapeze of the mist, sensing the present would be no more. I have to say that actually reminds me of the bats that were ever present on the ceiling here in this place, were dancing in glee with the possible experimental corpses that were possibly driven through here earlier. They were quite happy dancing on their little rooftops, and this reminded me of them. Also, the ending, outside meets inside in an instant of explode, calamity for some, ecstasy for others. Yes, I have to agree that some explosions can be ecstasy and some can be calamitous or both. And I have to say that I resonate very well with that sentiment. And they did a great job in expressing this this poem.
Oh, that is a delightful thought. Though, if you think about it in the right instance, one such peak explosion with the right tools could be both calamitous and a bout of ecstasy. Here I go, yet again, thinking of delightful things. I really should not be left to my own devices, darling. We need to make a note not to do that.
Well, I have to keep
a little blood.
Keep my reputation as a bad influence. So.
Yes, well, I've never quite minded your bad influence, though, have I? But speaking of the way that we can be shaped and angels and demons can mold and manipulate between the two, it reminds me of another poem by a poet named Jenny Vadeep, and it's called Ashes of the Abandoned Angel, because what is a demon if not something that was once great and glorious and divine who's been mistreated into despair? So it does seem like an appropriate read, and it goes like this. Gloomy, smoky gray leaves fall from the deathly cursed hollow tree, surrounding an abandoned angel, lost in a sinner's grin. She bowed down on her bleeding knees and waited on a savior that never came. The smell of rotting death enters her nose, crawling down her throat and eating all her sins. On titanium tone, tightly twisted tree branches, planting seeds of her deliciously dark demons. They sprawl out, making her famished. Demented, dark angel ravaged by these dark demons. Her haunted spirit now released, floating across the tormented sky. Her leaf-shaped ashes sway gingerly, entangled with the roots. Her ashes sink, buried into the ground. To this day, on each eve of the blood moon, her sleeping spirit suddenly and forever blooms. End poem. I do so love this idea. Life does not always end, as we know here in the library, with the physical death. Death comes in a plethora of colors and forms. The death of oneself. The death of our ego. The death of a body, even, in the sense of how it changes from one life event to the next. After all, the body of a child is not the body of a woman or a man. This reminds us of that. And yet, some deaths linger, the torment drying on to hear the wailing. It reminds me of La Llorona, Bloody Mary, all those beautiful ghosts, tormented and trapped to relive themselves. Which reminds me, we should check the mirrors, we should check the bathrooms. This is the time when those ones do come creeping and crawling out, you know. And say, after this, perhaps you'll help me check the dungeon, yes?
Most definitely.
Most delightfully. But tell me, what do you think of this? Especially you, who has wandered around.
Well, I have to say that being imprisoned in the way that she was seemingly under the hollow tree, I know all about. And I have to say that it is a fate that can change one such as a beautiful angel into a hollowed vestige of nothingness. And as you said, our There are many deaths, and there is the death of pride and the death of our body. And in turn, she suffered many deaths, yet her ashes tend to recycle her poignance on this planet and keep her tied. And whether it be a curse or a blessing, to me it seems like a curse, but she's still here in many forms, and I have to say that it reminds me of a scientist spoke of energy, that it cannot be created or destroyed, merely changes forms, and this is a testament to that, and I appreciate Jenny's depiction of that.
Oh, yes, and I have to say, I didn't quite think of you beneath your tree of the Hag's Home. I can see where you would resonate with this. I do so delight in it. But with that in mind, it does remind me of this next poem, and, well, I think you'll appreciate it. It's El Gente Sin Cabeza by W.K. Cortes. Would you mind reading this for us?
Well, I can try. Let's see. El Gente Sin Cabeza by W.K. Cortes. Oh, he still rides about this village, tucked away in Irving's bucolic corner of the Hudson Valley, chasing some hairy jogger on a poster promoting some 5K race, or perhaps pictured astride his horse, tuxedo-clad, severed head, winking outrageously, advertising some charity event at some grand former estate with an equally grand view of the river. He is less conspicuous in that part of the village, which is, say, west of Broadway and south of Beekman, where the neon signs and the bars tout Corona and Dos Equis, and the Argo on the sidewalks and street corners is not the Dutch of the Van Brunts and Van Tassels, but every bit as Greek to their progenitors, who owned homes with expansive lawns tended to by the denizens of the neighborhood, or who work in midtown office towers they scrub and shine. Not that they come to that part of town anyway, mind you, as the place engenders in them an uneasiness not begat by some quaint rusticity, a locale where they find soft footfalls much more disquieting than thunderous hoofbeats. And poom.
A delightful take on old tales. That's one of the things that I often think about. You know, recently I was reading here in the library that some think that perhaps cirrhosis of the liver is what actually causes people to believe in demons once upon a time, before medicine was really prevalent and they understood, or we understood, what happens within the body as it changes and decay, of course, in the natural cycle of life without intervention. The yellowing of the eyes and the skin, the bloated belly that seems to create a husk of a person. Yes, I could imagine that looks much like possession. And rabies is believed to be in part attributable for vampirism. This too, though, reminds us of how some tales, such as a headless horseman, can be morphed into something more modern day. The way in which we lose our mind and give way to society. It is quite delightful, a reminder that our demise of the monsters are created in more ways than one. But having read it, what did you think, darling?
Well, monsters indeed. This seems to be to reek of the rich, feigning their value upon society, avoiding the poor neighborhoods. I tend to enjoy stories such as Mask of the Red Death, when the rich meet their grim and gruesome fates. But this is a different tale, obviously. I would have to say that if I saw tuxedo-clad, severed head beating outrageously, I would have to imagine that I was home. There are strange, strange things out there. And this encapsulated the societal norms in a tragic yet comedic way. I can appreciate the artistic depiction of that, and think that they did a really good job in translating that to us.
Oh, most assuredly, they did. They did indeed. Now, I am slightly digressing, thinking of Headless Horseman and all. It reminds me of this piece, perhaps one that we read earlier, of a piece written by Naomi Sarah, and it's titled Vampirish Depravity. Arguably, perhaps this would have been better read after the one that you read for us, darling, but I will give this one a shot. I watched you, suckling her neck, your hands slithering around, groping, cupping your lover's swollen breasts so hard and ripe. Shameless in a crowded room, the moist scarlet stain on your lips, leaving her skin. I absorbed you in holy love, the way you tilt your head right at the perfect angle as you bite into her milky flesh, softly closing your eyes, moving in so slowly. I stand paralyzed, euphoric in your smell that lingers throughout the room, from your dress to your steps, breath. The scent of you that drifts from the curves of your lover's steaming body. Count the times you run your fingers through her hair while listening to your tongues eating out each other's mouths. Hypnotized as you gracefully waltz in and out. An icy wind in midsummer, feeding on the heat of her body. Confident, brazen, basking in the sweaty arousal of onlookers, ripping off her clothes, biting, sucking, licking, clawing, grinning wickedly. Oh my God, yes. I hear you smiling in sweet satisfaction each time she moans. It drives me wild. I'm high and wet on you. You are something I need for myself, that I desperately want. My eclipsed pupils widen like the moon, my corrupted mind damp with desire. Please come, take me, I whisper, down on my knees, crawling to you, begging you to say my name, wanting to hear it, spitting out that of that mouth of yours. Oh, all the wonders that mouth must perform. I want you to hear me moaning, to taste your disease poisoning my lips, to become yours, begging you on the cold floor, wanting to feel my body writhing as your teeth graze my throat and as your hands trail down, down, to rest between my thighs, sending me spiraling, shivering into a world entirely not my own, feeling your fingers dancing inside of me, sliding through puddles, finding hidden doorways I'd thought long gone. Me bracing your wrist, fingers encircled tight, moaning through ragged breath. Don't stop. Never stop. You are my obsession. I belong to you. Forever yours. End poem. Well, I might need to go check those doorways again. Stairways. Yes, stairways. I need to go check the stairways. Probably the ones leading down into the dungeon. That was delightful. More ideas. I'm telling you, darling, this night is not here to create terrors and frights, but it does feel like a temptation of delight, don't you think?
Well, I mean, there are terrible delights to be had, and I would recommend that we immediately check our stores, because my, these grave affairs seem to be multiplying. However, this in particular, it did awaken some sense of my former self, and I have to say that I was terribly delighted myself. So I have to try to simmer down back to a frigid temperature, or else I may just burst into flames. that is not recommended.
Oh, darling. I am tickled pink with it. In fact, I have to say, as I was flipping through these pages, trying to get a little calm myself, I saw your own Bane of the Hollow, and I might cover it as Bone of the Hollow, so there's most certainly something on my mind. Oh, quite delightful. But perhaps we should go to a place a little bit more chilly. Perhaps we should go and visit a few old ghosts, and not ones that might be able to tantalize our senses. So, as I take a few breaths of my own and breathe in the delightful, chilly October air, would you be so kind as to read this while I open some windows?
I will attempt. This is Graveyard Ghost by The Visitor. When next you walk the silent path, past tombs of weathered stone, think a while upon the ones your steps may tread upon. The breeze, which carries in a hush, drifts through the fallen leaves, spinning living pirouettes as if the graveyard breathes. Some stones still tall and others low, all sad from tumbling down. Here you'll find an angel laying with a broken marble crown. Her perfect face, the artist's best, seems cast in sweet repose. I placed between her lifeless hands a real and living rose. Into that stone my rose had grown, and a smile played on her lips. Yes, I gazed and stood amazed as she moved her fingertips. Some say that I did dream that day such things as this can't be. Let them scoff. I knew enough. She turned and smiled at me. End poem.
Oh, what a beautiful poem. And again, it does entice me to go walking through the graveyard. There are moments when those that come peeking at us and visiting us are not always just from beyond the grave. Sometimes the embodiment of the artist, the muse, does become embedded within the art itself. A way for us to revisit those that we care about and yet perhaps be caught by something else. Yes, it is a storm, a masterpiece in many ways. Delightful. And what did you think, my darling? Care to take a wander through a cemetery?
I usually go there for reagents, so I would not mind. But as for this man's partner who is deceased, so to speak, I cannot say whether he saw what he saw, but I know that he saw what he wanted to see. And whether it be true or not, as long as it brought him a bit of solace, I suppose that just let him be. Why not? No rest for the wicked, as they say, but this man does not seem wicked, so let him rest, and let her rest, in my opinion. It was a beautiful tribute, I believe.
Oh, most certainly indeed. There are monsters and wicked that come away, and yet there can be rest found in such things. It reminds me of another poem that we have here by an author, K.P.S., and it's titled Masterpiece, The Black Dahlia. And naturally, while it is not so much a monster, the Black Dahlia, it is still one too of such horrible tales. A monster not of fiction and of our imagination to reconcile the bad of life with the good, but a reminder that there is in fact bad within those of society. But this one reads, when I bite you, I want to see. I want you to see you're more than flesh and blood to me. Your body is a palette for me to play. Your last breath will be taken today. I lick the tears tearing from your eyes, watery scream as your love dies, blood trickles from your icy veins, this is the shit that keeps me sane, teeth marks on your torn pasty skin, let the pain and pleasure begin, submit yourself to my desire, say you love me, you fucking liar, fleshy wealth from leather whips, pleasurable lies wet your lips, needles stabbing your limbic brain, slicing skin is all that remains. The shit is real and about to get rough, bloody wrists and stainless cuffs, piercing nipples with canine teeth, a razor dripping all over its sheath, teeth marks on your torn, pasty skin. Let the pain and pleasure begin. Submit yourself to my desire. Say you love me, you fucking liar. Anticipation is fueling your legs. Eyes wide open as you beg. I see smiles in your eyes. Right before you fucking die. A little cut here, nip and tuck there. Run my fingers through your bloody hair. Display your body for all to see. My masterpiece is done. Time to flee. Teeth marks on your torn, pasty skin. Let the pain and pleasure begin. Submit yourself to my desire. Say you love me. You fucking liar. End poem. It is delightful the way that we convince ourselves of the masterpieces that we do. Watch as our plans come to fruition. It reminds me of that other piece, The Younger Brother. The way that we take out our rage and our torment on others, the way that we try to manipulate our reality. You can say very easily that many of those who enjoy the taking of life enjoy the opportunity to bind, torture, kill, if you know your acronyms and serial killers. Many of them are trying to bend reality to theirs. Arguably, society does as well. Perhaps not in so malevolent ways, but arguably just as poorly, as badly. And this reminds us of that. carving reality to make it our own. Well, at least within this library, I have the final say, to a degree. But tell me, darling, what does this make you think of?
Well, this people tend to use their vanity and paint their sins on the flesh of others and like to think themselves as gods and deities. This is no different. This is a telling of a tale as old as time. The pride of man and the climax of his lust of self. And I have to say that sometimes it can be rather impressive how far the ego can drive a person's brain, and this is no different. It is a very sick and twisted, yet very welcome sight in this library.
Oh, most certainly, and you're right. Ego does twist the brain, that is most certainly true, creating a storm of reality that you must face or confront. It does remind me of this next poem, though, by Ray Cope. Would you mind reading that one for me?
I will try. Let's see. Okay. After a Storm by Ray Cope. A flash of lightning, boom of thunder, wrenched me from my peaceful slumber. Bleary-eyed with muddled brain, I hear the raindrops on the pane. As shadows dance upon the wall, the clock strikes two in downstairs hall. I lie agog amidst the din, the blankets pulled up to my chin. Outside the tempest booms and roars, and I give thanks to be indoors. Morpheus must have called my name. I nodded off to sleep again, awaking as the clock struck three, when all was still as could be. No shrieking wind, no driving rain, the moon was shining bright again. Then all at once my door did bound, as from downstairs I heard a sound. A door creaked open, then a moan. I cursed my luck for being alone. I felt so overcome with dread. 'Tis then I heard a steady tread. My pleasant dreams turned to nightmares. I heard footsteps ascend my stairs. Who's there? I cried, not understanding. Who processed upon my landing? Sweating now from every pore, the footsteps reached my bedroom door. A pause and then the faintest scratch. An unknown hand toyed the latch with the latch. Just then the door had opened wide. A spectral figure stepped inside. Rendered mute with shock and awe, I scarce believed at what I saw. A bearded man, and tall was he, scratched his chin and glared at me. His greasy hair hung long and lank, his odor vile, putrid and rank. Two bloodshot eyes rolled in his head. Begone, you devil, go, I said. His long brown coat was torn and old, and fastened by four buttons gold. No shoe or boots had shod his feet, his like no man would wish to meet. He scratched himself, then scratched some more, looked at the ceiling, then the floor, caring not a jot nor fig, commenced to twirl, gyrate and jig. His tongue had lolled, his eyes were wide, I wished I had some place to hide, but I lay still, as though enchanted. The wraith gambled and raved and ranted, till finally the clock struck five. I thanked the Lord for being alive. My heart was beating loud and clear, despite the shock, ditto the fear. Then from outside a blackbird called to specter stopped. He ceased. He stalled. Dawn was breaking through the gloom. The first sunbeam streaked in my room. The phantom shrieked and looked aghast. With muttered oaths, he stumbled past, straight through my wall and from my view. And as he left, he murmured, "Boo." I leapt from my bed with renewed vigor, determined to pursue the figure. Hurling wide the bedroom door, I charged out to the corridor. He turned to face me, laughed and jeered, and then he slowly disappeared. Ill at ease at what had passed, I trudged downstairs to break my fast. I'd think it through to make some sense. I'd ponder on the last night's events. Whilst eating toast and drinking tea, a glint, a gleam attracted me. The source lay by the kitchen door, a golden button on the floor. I rushed across and scooped it up, sat down again and drained my cup. Did he leave me this souvenir to say goodbye or reappear? Was this but just a ghostly note? Would he return to mend his coat? 2 decades later, here I dwell. All is peaceful, all is well. No sign of phantom rat or mouse disturbs my tranquil little house. I keep the button on my bed in a small glass jar of blue and red. And long before the storm clouds grow, I swear that button begins to glow. End poem.
Oh, what a delightful piece. It actually reminds me of many of the artifacts you can find here within the library. The little things that you might pick up thinking that it is benign and bring home a visitor that you did not intend it to have. What a wonderful way to spin a tale that reminds us that things sometimes cling to those things, to things that we don't quite expect. But tell me, darling, I know our time is coming here close to an end, but quickly, what did you think of this?
Well, as you said, the living and the dead, they share but a veil, and sometimes they can traverse the veil and end up leaving us of gifts or two, or sometimes a curse or two. One will never know until the day comes. But yes, I agree. And I think they did a great job in telling the story and letting people know of the veil.
Oh, most certainly they did. And we have 3 more pieces that I want to get through. And so for those that are listening in, I will warn that our own veil cuts off here relatively soon. So if you wish to hear those voices behind it, you can always come down to the library and revisit this conversation. And quickly, I would like to note that if you have enjoyed these stories, we do have a few in collections that you can find at Amazon.com, and it does help maintain this little library of ours, as well as all of the other wonderful places that you can go to interact with other poets, share your soul, share your thoughts, and create a little artistic creativity. But with that in mind, I'm going to move on quickly to our next poet who is named Sonia3902Z. She walks the valley. She walks the valley holding a black rose as she searches for her last love. They were together for a long time, frolicking through the night in their prime. Villagers see her shadow against the full moon. The air reeks of sulfur as she passes by, hearing her haunting sobs of dark despair. Hiding in their homes is more than they can bear. Over the years, a shroud covers the valley. Sunshine and blue skies are from the past. Her body is shrunken and quite gaunt. Finding her lover is part of the haunt. She walks the valley holding a black rose, as a prisoner of a circle keeps her in chains. Her tears of black petal join in a windy storm. making her disappear and no longer to form. End poem. I do so love this one because, as we just learned, the veil between the living and the dead can sometimes be a little thin, and those that are still seeking to rectify their ending can sometimes find a path that they continue to wander along. But tell me, darling, what did you think?
Well, I think that a lot of the veil can sometimes give way to the strength of emotions, and whether it be vengeance or lust or love, or sadness, despair, these are all prime emotions that could tear open the veil asunder and could lead one realm pouring into another. And this is an example of that, and with a deep emotion of love and despair. And they tore wide open the veil, and they're still there.
Oh, most certainly that is true. Despair does tend to linger both for the living and the dead. And speaking of despair, at least to a bit, it reminds me of your own Bane of the Hollow. Would you mind sharing that one with us? I mean, some of our gay visitors have decided to wander off, perhaps in a not-so-safe manner. I mean, I would not have encouraged them leaving without at least one of us to guide them, but teach us their own, and well, there's always room here at the library. So, if you would, Mike, I would love to hear Bane of the Hollow.
No, this is by one of the escapees, I believe, named Robert Ebb, and is called Bane of the Hollow. Deep within the shadowed veil is home to a most frightening tale, a tale filled with terrible dread about the horseman who hasn't a head. He rides along on his ebon steed with nightmarish eyes and hellish speed. Should you try, fight, or flee, you'll just add to his savage spree. With blade or hammer or pistol in hand, you cannot kill the already damned. He gallops on without remorse, wielding his curse with brutal force. He will hunt and he will maim, your head his trophy, your death his aim. He'll gather his bounties in a sack, then trot on into the endless black. On Hallow's Eve, from dusk till dawn, he raids and pillages and then he is gone. It is no wonder why the citizens wallow in the curse-riddled town of Sleepy Hollow. End poem.
Oh, what a wonderful tale still, the reminder of the Headless Horseman in all his true original vigor. The reminder that these things are not so easily killed, these fears not so easily conquered. And sometimes we are just here to be victim to them. It is, in fact, quite delightful, don't you think, Darfindale?
Yeah, they many of us are victims to fear and of curses, I have to say. I know of both. But, the horseman, you do not want to cross him or whoever it is that may be controlling him. It's a very vicious curse, to say the least, and do not envy those that encounter it.
Oh, most certainly, I would agree. And with that, we only do have one last thought. And I feel that it might be just perfect as we wrap up this night and send you all out back into the world, back where the veil is a little thinner and hoping that you don't cross over it, never to return. This one is called Night Tremors, and well, as you lay down at night tonight, rest your head upon your pillow and close your eyes. Should you open them, remember not all of them are dreams. So this is by Ode Codger, and it reads, am I awake or am I sleeping? Have I dreamt at all? That half-remembered phantom in the half-forgotten hall, the half-crazed whirling waltzes at that howling half-lit ball. And did my candle flicker then, or do my eyes deceive my maddening mind with mischief, or am I bound to believe I've peered beyond the veil upon this grim All Hallows Eve? This sudorific slumber is contorting me in fright. Will I survive the torture of this nightmare of a night? Or haunting among the number of the ghastly, ghostly white? I'm suffocating, drowning in an ever-mounting dread, invading every sinew and the pounding in my head. I'm surely an assurance that I've never left this bed. And all the while, the unremitting ticking of the clock beats louder still and louder till my wits all shook by shock are failing me and flailing me as if upon a rock. About my room, my sodden linens now lie rudely strewn, illuminated by spectral shimmers by a mocking mood. O Lord, the blessed morning cannot come an hour too soon. I ache to hear the waking wild come herald of the day and see the soothing smiling sun spill in to sweep away the shadows and the life-restoring light the dark outweigh and feel the stark autumnal air dispel my fell dismay. End poem. So, as I bid you farewell tonight, darlings, I hope that as you crawl into your bed, and as you close your eyes, and as you fall into the dreams of this world, like this poem, I hope your eyes open tomorrow, that the dark is pushed away and the nightmares are quelled as you sleep back into reality. May I remind you that there is a witching hour, and sometimes in that hour things come to life that we don't always quite know. Touches a little too close, especially when the veil is thin. So as you leave, be safe. Light a candle and watch where you step. Good night.